compassion, honesty, or loyalty. These are three of the eight virtues of Bushido.
Okay.
Which one of these three do you think are the most important to Jack's journey?
Okay, give me the list one more time.
Compassion, honesty, loyalty.
Ooh.
I know, hefty.
Honestly? Oh, well, I was going to say, honestly, I think it's honesty, but that's not... I struggle with that because I think part of what makes Jack's character so interesting is his compassion. And he's never, even when he meets and encounters something that looks different than him, that is different than him, he never meets it with hostility unless even if he meets hostility until he's physically threatened to the point of them like pulling a weapon and charging, he never treats them like they're like an enemy or someone who's treating him wrongly.
Sure.
So, ooh, that's a good question. Good this, this, or that.
Thank you.
I think I'm probably going to go compassion.
Okay.
I just don't think we get the character of Jack and how much he willingly goes on all of his different tangential journeys of helping all of these people out, culminating in that final episode, without having a compassion for people. And even when it takes him away from his core goal and his core directive of getting back, he's always, he's willing to sacrifice wishes. He's willing to sacrifice many of the portals simply because someone needs help. So I think compassion is probably for me. Naisha, what about you?
Sorry, give me the list one more time. I want to say I agree with you, but I just like, oh.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Those other ones are good.
Compassion, honesty, or loyalty?
Yeah, it is compassion. I do think it is compassion, because when you brought up the point, like the fight up into like the final episode, the reason like the series ends the way it ends is because of Jack's compassion. And compassion is just such a integral part of who he is, where if Jack was not compassionate and if he was just focused on his goal, he would have already achieved his goal and defeated a coup and gone back in time.
Yeah.
But instead we see him time and time again, he chooses compassion over his own goals.
Yeah.
So while he is loyal and he is honest, I think first and foremost, he's compassionate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you guys. I think it's compassion as well. I think without the fifth season, I might have been convinced of loyalty, just with his like loyalty to family. And it was hard to choose three out of the eight.
What
like,
are the other five?
Let me pull it up. Let me pull it up, because it was interesting researching this as well, because there was a lot of argument as to whether Bushido is like an actual samurai code of ethics, or if it was something that was created that was like an amalgamation of like Japanese samurai, like moral ethics combined with some tenets of Christianity. There's like I've seen multiple sort of conversations about it.
Okay.
And I certainly haven't read any of the like books on Bushido to know enough of like the sort of cultural conversation that's happening, but it would make a ton of sense if there was some, you know, combination there, because there were some like seppuku and stuff like that. That was all
right,
like historically
yeah.
a part of it. But as far as like the word Bushido, that wasn't really used until much later. So it was just very fascinating. If I had more time, I would just love to unpack all of it, because it was just a really interesting sort of concept. So let's see.
Oh, yeah.
Because there were also like some like minor tenets as well. So righteousness, heroic courage, which is, they kind of differentiate it from regular courage in the sense that like a true warrior must have heroic courage. It's always kind of risky. You're willing to kind of just like, I think the way they phrase it is like live life wonderfully and like fully. So you just like, I think we kind of see that from Jack a couple times where he just goes full throttle into things. It's not blind. It's like you're still using your reason, but you're kind of just like going for it. And, you know, if you die, you die. You left it all on the table.
Seeing a huge jump and not even hesitating twice.
Ultimately.
Just going.
Yeah, exactly. Benevolence or compassion. Respect, which you kind of see with like his family and with others, you know, when he's, which I think kind of goes with compassion in some regard. But even the first time he steps foot in the that bar that he's directed to go to.
Yeah.
You see him demonstrate respect to people that he's like completely alarmed by. Honesty, honor, duty and loyalty, and then self-control. And then the associated virtues are filial piety. So just like, I think honoring ancestors and honoring family, wisdom, which I think he grows in considering everything experiences. Like, I think that's the one that I've seen when rewatching it, the most growth in him. Because he's relatively young when this happens to him. When everything happens to him, he's young.
Yeah.
You know, he's a young adult, and then he's like a child.
I mean, I think I just always assumed he's like 18. That's me assuming, you know, like when we see him and when he comes back home, like he leaves home when he's like 7.
Right.
And then he comes back and they're like, you're a man now. I'm like, okay, so 16 or 18.
Yeah.
But like, he looks like a man, so 18. Right. But like, you're right. Like, as I was rewatching it, my first thought was like, this is so much pressure. On a young man.
Yep.
And it's just like the entire world has his faith and he's carrying that. And I don't know why it didn't click with me the very first time I watched this show. But, it's his sense of duty and like all those other like tenets that you listed that I think he does not succumb. I mean, at least not in the first 4 seasons, but like he doesn't succumb to like depression or anxiety easily, but he does experience it. We do see that he does experience it in some form.
Yeah. And then the last one is fraternity, which he doesn't get a ton of. He like he gathers that on the way with all the friends that he makes. But some of the long-term friends, it's not so much that he's in continual communion with them. It's that they're just they're familiar enough with what he's done in the world, or they're so thankful that they're willing to go back for him, like like the Scotsman. I would say that is probably one of the better examples of fraternity.
And especially when he meets the ghost of the Scotsman, he's like, "You're dead," and he's like, "Kind of."
Celtic magic,
just a wee bit.
Yeah.
It was so good. I loved seeing that depiction, despite like the first time we meet him on the bridge, having lived there for a year and a half, the accent, I was like, oh wow,
yeah, it's very cartoony,
atrocious. But
it's the thing that,
like, Joe DiMaggio's impression,
right? Well, and then like as soon as we heard it, I was like, that's freaking Joe DiMaggio. I'd know that voice anywhere. But it wasn't so much like the accent, it was the attitude in which it was portrayed that I was like, that's Scottish full and through. Like, that's, you know, the accent is terrible, but the attitude is 100% Scott.
Yeah, it's the banter that he was trying to have and keep ratcheting up the insult game. Like, that was on point Scottish. And I think the only thing that I wish he would have done, and this is just something that you don't know until you be there, like, they like to really emphasize the English, like, cannots or knows. Mm-hmm. And especially in the broad Scots that he's trying to imitate, that would be canne or nay.
Yeah.
And you would never, you hardly ever actually hear no ever.
Right.
It's
like, if you hear no, you're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if it's, I cannot do that, it's, I cannot do that. And it just rolls super, super fast off the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I loved the interaction. Mm. And trying to marry off one of his daughters at the end, I was cracking up with that. I was like, oh my gosh. And
I just died with that, because I'm just like, pause, because like in season 5 Jack doesn't age.
Right,
we learned that for whatever reason he just has not aged, which I get it, plot device, we can't have an old man Jack in the future, but it's just funny where I'm like, you asking this man who's like now like 60 something to marry one of your daughters. And I just feel weird about that. But then I also just like, this is very much the Scotsman. Like,
yeah,
he would love for Jack to marry one of his daughters.
Oh, yeah.
And be a part of his family.
Yeah.
Only to get offended when Jack is trying to find the tasteful way of saying, I met someone. And his immediate response is, what, they're not good for you? He's just like, yep, that's perfect. Hello, Mampersands. This is episode 144 of the MinMax podcast. And if you haven't guessed already from the little bits of banter that we've been having so far, we are talking Samurai Jack. And as we are dipping our toes back into the land of anime, we figured we know an anime expert. We know someone who knows what she's doing and has built a whole podcast career over talking about anime. So if you haven't listened to some of the early episodes or the flashback episode that came out 2 weeks ago, this is the voice of the lovely Lanesha Campbell. How are you doing, Nasha?
I'm good. You give me too much credit. You said a career. Like, dang. How many podcasts
are you on talking about anime now?
Yeah, like, have you Googled you recently?
Your SEO is real good.
Really? I, if I don't have a job interview or anything, I don't Google myself. Like, I always just make sure nothing bad is out there by chance, which there is, and I'm not, like, a criminal or anything. But in the last few years, I do just, like, put it on my resume. I'm like, I'm a podcaster. Don't ask about it. Like, right. I put it on there so people don't ask me about it in interviews. But thank you, guys. Yeah. Thank you for including me and having me on to talk about one of my favorite I want to say Western-inspired anime.
Yeah.
Because I feel like people will literally try to drag us. I'm like, it's not an anime. I'm like, I count it as an anime in the same way people count The Airbender as an anime. Yeah. So to me, Samurai Jack does meet some of the requirements to be an anime. But, you know.
Just out of curiosity.
This is like one of my favorites.
I've never heard anyone actually make that distinction. Can you, before we actually get into the topic, can you unpack what actually... like the core classification bullets that you have to hit to be technically considered anime?
I think most of the time, or traditionally, a lot of people just think an anime is like, you know, a animated either based on a manga, like it has to come from Japan. It has to come from like a Japanese creator and like those kind of things. But like it's distinctly Japanese influenced. So, you know, like the characters, the culture of like the world that it takes place in and all these things. But at the same time, like in the last, I want to say, you know, 10 years, I can be, or 15 years, we've seen a lot of like people our age who grew up watching anime become inspired by that. And they created their own content that I would say is anime influenced. So like The Last Airbender is a great example of that because you see the influences of anime. Even though it is created in the West, whereas, you know, you see something like Full Metal Alchemist and you can distinctly tell that's an anime.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's so broad. And I think the definition of what an anime is changing and evolving all the time. Like there's just so many, the genre is so vast.
Yeah.
And there's different opportunities for people to, you know, enter that genre. But traditionally, I would say the biggest requirement it comes from Japan. It was created by a Japanese creator. It's drawn in an anime style. It's usually like what people count it as an anime.
Yeah.
So we can obviously go anywhere with Samurai Jack, but I know, Nasha, you really wanted to hone in on season 5. Can you unpack a little bit about what it is about season 5 that you found so compelling? And then we can start riffing from there.
I have so many feelings. Season 5 probably came out like 2 or 3 years ago now.
Three,
I can't remember.
Yeah, it's 3. But I think it was 2017.
Yeah, 3 years. And man, it just left me with so many feelings like each week when the episode dropped. And I think it's because it is the culmination of all the previous 4 seasons. And then it really gets gritty and more adult in season 5 with the topics that they're handling. Like in the previous seasons, they did touch on things like Jack did become depressed, or like you saw him struggling with his sense of duty and the challenges he would face. So there are plenty of episodes that show him trying to complete a task in order that he can get closer to defeating Aku and getting back to the past. But we see him, like, repeatedly, his quest continues. He literally would say that after many episodes of, like, my quest continues. Where season 5, we're introduced to a Jack that has lost that spirit. And honestly, it's like he's lost that will to keep moving forward. He's just trying to survive now. And it's like the first time you see him in this way where it's like, this isn't the regular Jack we're used to. Like, this is a very adult Jack. This is a Jack who uses guns and shoots first. And like, he doesn't try. Like, there's no more, like, he's still compassionate. He's helping people. He still has a sense of duty to help people, but it's like he's off the path of his journey.
Yeah. And I think that comes forth the most when he, like, kills his first human. And that moment, like I grabbed Alan's arm and I was like, wait, is that his first, like, that's the first time we see blood. And he's like, yeah, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And then the whole scene plays out. And Alan and I were talking about shame in anime specifically a while ago, just in conversation. And I feel like, especially in season 5, in my opinion, and I, you know, I'm not nearly as well versed, but that is got to be at least one of the best narrative depictions of shame I've ever seen, just because it takes its time with it in ways that I think, like, some shows just kind of rush through. This, it, like, it makes you actually contemplate what it is like to be in a position of shame, and how that when it's gone unaddressed, to what end that brings somebody to, which is heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking, but makes a lot of sense for someone who has so little hope left.
That's the thing, like, the first time watching it, my first time watching season 5, and we know that they're human. And Jack is just convincing himself it's just nuts and bolts, just like all the other time, just nuts and bolts. And it's like this, it's this, you get this sense of dread when you realize that he's using the rest of his resolve to, like, I have to keep going. I can't die here. But then it's like when he realizes he took a human life, it shakes him. Yeah. And it's the first time he's ever, like you said, it's the first time he's killed a living, an actual sentient living thing that was not a robot.
Yeah.
Like, because he's killed robots, and I want to say, like, cyborgs, because, like, we see animals who have been, like, to the point they're just basically they're more robot than, like, person.
Yeah.
But this just hit him differently, and it's sad. But then he has to, like, use the rest of his resolve, and he does not want to have to kill a human life, but we see in order to survive, he has to kill the rest of the daughters of Aku, in that episode. And I just think that still shakes him, and that stays with him as the season goes on.
Yeah.
I think the daughters of Aku, that was the first moment when I looked at Ashley in this season, as soon as they, like, you open with the woman giving birth, and I was like, oh, this is... In my head, I was like, this is where the writers wanted to go. They wanted to be able to go this dark, but I'm sure we're shackled by Cartoon Network at the time.
Which is, like, and also fair, trying to navigate, because I think at that point, too, animation was still trying to find its footing as far as, like, okay, can animation be for adults and not be, like, Robot Chicken or something? Like,
it was still waiting for its Gwen Stacy moment.
Yeah,
it was still waiting for the moment where you could kill someone and this become, it transcend from just what people would think of as children content to mature, dealing with very heavy themes.
Yeah.
And I looked at Ashley because it's not until you get much later in the season with the 50 years of, I don't know if I want to call it insanity Aku, but he definitely has gotten lazy and, like, has lost his will to fight.
Lethargic.
Yeah.
Lethargic.
Yeah. He's having, like, a whatever 500 centuries year old crisis or whatever. Like, he can't comprehend what his purpose is if.
Yeah. But it's not until we get his side of the story of how that happened that you don't know that Aku decided that he was going to double down and create demigods. And it was like, whoa, this got dark. And brainwashing children from the time of their birth. Like, this took a turn.
Yeah. When it's an interesting foil as well from like Jack's training to defeat Aku, which like, and the only reason I bring Bushido into the conversation is because it's like referenced once in an episode. I think he refuses to fight somebody and they're like, right, enough with the Bushido bull crap or whatever. Which was a very funny line considering how many, you know, guys try to learn the code and then live it out in their, you know, ridiculously suburban lives. Oh, it's just amazing. But so taking his training and code of ethics and then looking at the daughters of Aku and how they're trained, but they're not formed by that code of ethics. They're formed by hate. All they know is to hate the samurai. And then that affects their judgment because they get distracted easily by the world around them for the most part. You know, that's why Ashi, you know, ends up ultimately starting to question things as she has that flashback to the first time she saw a ladybug. And it's starting to make her doubt everything she was trained by, which is like the weakness of Aku's being able to create anything to begin with, because it's inherently based in like the evil hatred as opposed to like a prolific sort of procreative love and compassion towards life in general.
Right.
Which is why he has to try to co-opt it and convince everyone that he did it.
Oh yeah, that he's the creator of everything, that he's created this beautiful life, and that they're just there to protect it.
Right, which is so true. Like you said, the parallels between like Jack's training and upbringing, and then the daughters of Aku, specifically Ashi, is that Ashi definitely had the curiosity that Jack had as a child, and like the wonder and the interest of knowing like about life in the world. Like, say, like her seeing the ladybug reminded me of like baby Jack when he saw a grasshopper, and he just followed it, and I'm like, that's so cute and pure and adorable. And you see, like, Ashi has like the ability to be innocent, and like she did not have to be born as a weapon. She was born to be a weapon, but she, like, you see inside her, like, there's a chance that she doesn't have to be a weapon, that there that she has free will still instilled in her, versus, you know, the other children just didn't have that. Her other sisters didn't seem to have that trait, whereas I think, like, when they get out and they see deer, like, to your point, like, they're so distracted, like, what are they doing?
Right.
Like, what are those things? And they're just, like, so thrown off, whereas, like, Jack grew up absorbing different cultures and training under different teachers and, like, learning to appreciate the world around him and nature. Whereas, like you said, this generation, or, like, 50 years later, most people believe that Aku is responsible for everything.
Right.
And like, the ones who do remember, they know that he is an evil overlord, whereas some people have just accepted what he is.
Yeah. What is also interesting to me in the process of her formation, how we get the flashback to Ashi being pushed into whatever, like that burning pit of whatever. So it like charcoals her skin, and then she like cleanses herself of that, I'm sure as much as she can, because then later we find, oh, you know, if she's Aku's daughter, you know, she's still going to have that in her. It's not going to fully depart. I was just curious what you guys thought of that in comparison to like the way that Jack deals with his shame. Like, that's all internal, but we see like a visual representation of it as like an angry Jack and then like a depressed Jack that he kind of talks to, dialogues with. Whereas like the things that Ashi is ashamed of almost physically manifests in like her trying to scrub like her past self off later when she takes a bath in that like spring. And then when she's trying to fight against that Aku part of her life, and it like completely coats her, but then she eventually like love helps her, you know, like any trope sort of thing, like love conquers all, it helps her break through. I just found that interesting and very artistic. Unfortunately, I don't think we're there yet where everybody thinks of animation and a lot of other sort of like nerd-based culture media as art, but that was such an artistic rendering of their two different forms of what they were ashamed of, to present it that way. I'd be curious if you guys noticed that kind of play out in any other characters that I might not be thinking of, whether it's a Scotsman
in the series
entirely. Yeah, like at all.
I just feel like because there's just so much focus on Jack and his quest, I don't think we really get that time with other characters, like to see like where they struggle with shame or like their own internal hatred. I want to say there's the one episode with the robot who's a mobster and there's a dog, and like I don't want to say he like hated himself, but it's like the dog. Because it's weird, like the episode literally is only focused on this robot mobster who, like, the dog's name is Lulu, and, like, he finds Lulu, and he's like, my life meant nothing until I found Lulu, and it's, like, it's so, all his focus is on that, and then, like, you learn that some weird scientist put, like, this chip in his head that made him aware, so he's no longer mindless, so it's, like, in a way, he does say that he hated his self-awareness, but then when it came to Lulu, it wasn't until like the dog showed him that like he appreciated the self-awareness, because it kept him alive to take care of the dog, and it made him aware to take care of the dog. But I feel like that one's just like that's the only one I can think of.
Sure.
What about you, Alan?
Honestly, I think that's, I'm having trouble coming up with one because of the little time that we get to spend with everyone else. I mean, other than that, I think to my knowledge, the Scotsman is the only one that gets more than like two visits, because you've got the initial one, you've got a revisit in season 4 and then again in season 5. So you get multiple snippets of them. We never get any sort of backdrop on how on earth he has a magic sword and why Aku had the hit out on him. And if he had a magic sword, is that why Aku is afraid of him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, definitely. That would be a very curious sort of, like one episode to see, like, okay, are there other swords then in other cultures? Because that'd be kind of an interesting sort of
one episode.
Point.
I want a whole season.
Sure. I would love a whole season or a series, but I'm trying to, like...
Yeah. Well, because there's Demango, the demon with, like, all the souls of the past heroes.
Yep.
So that was also my assumption of like, he's like, do you think you're the first one that tried to take down Aku? And it's like, I have all the souls of the previous hero. So I assume like when Jack's fighting them, like, okay, these people have magical weapons. And I always just thought like, why wasn't there anyone that came after Jack? Like, why is it that Jack is the one that has to do it? And I say that, I'm just like, the good stuff to a point where I'm like, I just want my boy to be happy.
Right.
I just want him to go back to the past and be happy. But I think it's like this whole thing about destiny, and he was destined to defeat him because his father defeated him, and like, you know, the three gods, which we never learned their names, but they're the ones that intervened to help Jack and Jack's father.
Right.
So I think we have to assume that is why Jack is responsible to carry it out.
Mm.
Yeah, it is interesting the depiction of that, because my brain went elsewhere. Because just because of the way that the depiction was, at least the centralized one, it reminded me so much of Odin, and it was like pulling on the Odin ideas, ideology, and I did forget for a second. I was like, wait, this is a Japanese story. Odin is nowhere in the picture in this one. So it was like, okay, was an interesting choice to have the divine intervention in that manner.
Yeah,
that was something I wanted to bring up to you guys, because I was curious about your thoughts on this. Is like, this show recognizes multiple faiths. So you have Buddhism, you have the Egyptian gods, you have Odin, you have there's another one, Hinduism. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you see representations of different faiths, and I was just like rewatching it, and then like how it's all connected. I thought this was like a very good show that did it, where it's like, it doesn't put any of them above one another.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't say like one god is lesser than the other gods. Like, they are all three working together to defeat Aku when he's just, you know, a form of darkness.
Yeah.
But it's like, even when they come together to bless the sword or create the sword, then there's like these ancient spiritual monks or something. I can't remember if it's monks or it's like, I just know they're like wielding the sword.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the sword is like divinely given to them. So I was just like, I like how they did that in the show. Like, I like that no faith is above one another, and Jack respects them all equally.
I think that's the word for it, though, because, I mean, we see one of the things that we see continuously from Jack is his utmost respect for everyone.
Yeah.
I really don't think we see him act in a disrespectful manner in the entire show.
Yeah, that's I think that's part of his shame.
Unless you push him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And that's when he feel and when he's the most shame-faced and when then he goes to really dark places.
Yeah, I think that, like, the one moment where you see him do it probably the most is when he's actively running from the explosion that Scaramouche causes. And you see him actively turn and run from... And I'll be curious to... I wanted to ask this question, too, since we're near here. Do you think that the Horned Rider was just his shame physically represented? Do you think, like, he kept seeing it because he felt like he had fallen off the righteous path? And so in the moments where his fear and where his crippling doubt was hitting him, that's when the rider showed?
My opinion only is I think his shame and his self-doubt is manifested by, like, those two different versions of himself that, like, argue with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the rider is, my opinion only, based off of what I'd interpreted, an actual manifestation of, like, samurai history or ancestry that is, like, signaling to him, hey, you haven't accomplished what you've done. You've also lost the sword. Also, you're not living by our code anymore, so you know what comes next. Like, we're going to kind of follow you around and remind you that this is a part of it. This is something you, like, dedicated yourself to, which is, I think, why we see those other, like, ghostly samurai when he's about ready to. Because I don't think, if they weren't real, if they were just, like, manifestations of his own shame, I don't think Ashi would have been physically, like, affected by them.
But I also, again, I would, in my head, I put her in a slightly different camp, too, being of, I guess we would have to technically classify her as, like, demi-demon?
Okay.
So, being of a partially spiritual creation.
Sure.
That was my thought, is being a, because if demons can fight everyone else, then the gods or the ancestral spirits that could be representative of angels could fight each other. And so that's where my brain kind of went. And so I agreed with you that absolutely that the two parts of him were his shame and him fighting with himself. Mm-hmm. And I guess the question that I was trying to think through in my head was the rider his righteousness that kept haunting him?
I guess, it depends on how you're interpreting righteousness. Is that just, like, a code that you live by that you keep, like, at the forefront of your mind? Is it, like, an actual spiritual manifestation of something? Because I think that's the thing that needs to be discussed, I guess, I never expected it to get to this point, like, the ontology of morality or, like, where, like, how that, like, where that is in our material world. Because if it's, like, a spiritual manifestation, I can understand what you're saying about Ashi being, like, part demon or what have you, being in the, like, one foot in the material world, one foot in the spiritual realm, but I can see those still interacting. Whereas it's, like, if it's your psyche, obviously, like, I'm not gonna shadow box your shame. That would be a really, like, odd sort of, like, how would that physically manifest in some regard? And I don't think that Ashi has the capacity to, like, physically psychoanalyze him in the ways that he's doing in his own head. I mean, Nisha, do you have any sort of, like, opinions on that at all?
No, I mean, I do kind of agree, because, like, when you go back and think about it, At first, I thought they were just, like, hallucinations.
Sure.
So, like, when we first see the samurai, the rider, because, like, Jack is having hallucinations.
Yeah.
Like, he's at the river, and every leaf that he sees falls reminds him of his father, his mother, and he's hearing them shame him of, like, you failed us, you forgot about us, we're dead. And then, like, he sees all the leaves fall, and it's, like, just endless souls who suffered because of a coup.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this man is hallucinating, and he's under a lot of stress and depression. Like, there's all these things. But, like, yeah, when it came to the samurai, I definitely felt like they put this pressure on him, and it's because, like, I think it is definitely about, like, the samurai's code and, like, his heritage as a samurai. But it felt like so unfair and just like ruthless of them to say like, okay, you failed and it's been 50 years. Like you said, like it's and you are not living by our path anymore. So now you must die. And I'm like, this can't be his family, right?
Right.
So then like it's not his family. It is like you, I think like you said, it's the ancestral code of the samurai. It is like everything that he has been like drilled into his head to like believe that they stand for. And it's weird because like I was kind of going back and forth. I'm like, these aren't his S ancestors, but like Ashi can interact with them, so they're real. Like this is really, really happening. Or is it just that like I was waiting for there to be a reveal. Like, were these being controlled by Aku at first? Like I thought like this was like we were these things haunting him because of Aku, but we learned that no, it's his own guilt. And I don't think they're manifested from him, but like they are real in the sense that they are spirits that are from the samurais of past. And I was just like, damn, that's really crappy. Like that's terrible. That they're like literally telling like you have to kill yourself because you failed your mission. I'm like, so if he kills himself, then there's no one to defeat the coup. So that's the solution. Like that just seemed ruthless. But yeah, it's interesting to think about because I think when we talk about it as Ashi being, you know, having one foot in the spiritual and one foot in the human world, she's the only other person that could help Jack come out of that. And she was the only person that could save him because I don't think anyone else would have been able to see what he was going through. And I think it's like also this thing of like she saw his pain. And she knew why he was like making himself going through this self-suffering because he thought he was responsible for another innocent's life taken. So, and it's, oh, which reminds me because it's not the daughters of, they're the first humans that he kills, but it is actually those sheep
Oh,
that
yeah.
he lets his rage,
You're
and
right.
that's why the shame is so intensified much more when you like think about like he killed those three sheep and like even though they're animals, he feels shame because he took a living creature, not for food and not for like, you know, a purpose. He took three innocent lives. So then he loses a sword after that. But now when we get fast forward to the daughters of Aku, it's like he's flashing back to that moment again, that moment where he let his anger get to him.
That's a good point. I because it came later, that reveal came later, I flip-flop them in the timeline, but that makes total sense and is who. And that's really interesting then that that's the moment that he loses the sword, is he loses his honor and the sword goes with it and he doesn't get it back until he's ready for it again.
And then it's he, once he goes to the bottom of the pit, once he revisits his shame, it's not that he doesn't find it. It's that it's not someone else who says it. It's like it triggers the memory. And it's like he says, I think this is the moment where the sword left me. And it's not that I lost the sword, that the sword left me. And I think the lie he told himself to make himself live with being able to run from his shame was, I lost it. I couldn't get down there.
Yeah, because it'd be harder to reconcile that it chose to leave him as opposed to him just being careless.
And that he kind of greets at the bottom, literally at rock bottom, he recognizes, like an old friend.
State Farm is there? Sorry. Sorry.
Perfect timing.
Well done.
Oh,
I applaud
I
you.
love
Well
it. I
done.
love
Thank
it. Oh, I love
It's at the bottom of the well, he recognizes that, no, I knew this answer all along.
it.
So, at that exact revelation, I need to ask you a very similar question. Did Ashi know all along?
Did Ashi know what all along?
Did she know in the moment when she recognized she had Aku's powers that she could open the portal? Did she know that she was erasing herself? And do you think that she made the same sacrifice that Jack was willing to make?
I think she knew when she stepped on the aisle. I don't think she knew. I don't think she made that realization before then, because I don't think she would get Jack's hopes up that high
Sure, yeah.
and get
I
to the
think that's
moment and
fair.
get to the moment where they and get to the moment where they're about to be married and have a happily ever after, and then she know, and she's going to Gurren Lagann, her, like him. I'm just like, no! I hate this trope so much. Yes. You guys have no idea. They do it every time, and I cry. And it's like, there. I also realize they have, like, Jack and Ashi are very parallel to in Berserk, Casca and Guts, and I'm just like, I can't do this.
Not
I can't
again.
Do this pain. It's just, I can't, like, enemies, like, turn rivals, turn lovers, and then, like, putting each other in danger to save one another, pulling somebody out of the darkness, and, like, showing them the light and a happily ever after, and then something traumatic happens.
Yep.
And then heartache. So, sorry, I get very passionate
no.
about this trope. I don't know what I forget what it's called, but it's, like, one of those tropes I absolutely can't stand, but it's also, when it's done well, I have to applaud it. But I don't think Ashi knew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See, I've gone back and forth on it, on whether or not, since kind of we've been talking, it's been rattling around in my head, and I wonder if she knew that there was always a clock, she just didn't know when it was going to run out.
Yeah, like, I wonder if she was always suspicious, because, you know, as she's kind of fading away, she says, I can't exist with, you know, if a coup doesn't exist. Like,
right.
That came too readily. I don't think it was, like, a sudden epiphany.
Yeah, she'd had that thought process already.
Yeah, I think it was certainly a suspicion.
Yeah.
But like Nisha said, like, after they arrived, because it was too, like, too much of an impulsive decision, like, because, you know, they were in the moment, she has to do it, or, you know, they're gonna have to keep fighting, so
right,
yeah. And that's, I think, what makes it the most heartbreaking, because, like, at what point does she, would she tell Jack, hey, I think this might be a thing we'll have to be aware of, because then he would just be like, that would be a whole nother saga where they'd try to be undoing that, and with Barb, like,
go
with,
back in time, it would go back to the future to change. It, like, this would be a whole other thing.
Yeah, there. I don't think there'd be any way of undoing that.
Right, and I was, like, so, like, when she went back there, and, like, they go back in time, that was my first thought. I'm like, please, God, let it be that, like, she keeps his powers, and, like, I don't know, some magic mumbo-jumbo, because Jack never aged. Like, let the man be happy. Like, let there be some crazy thing that happens, and there's a fluke. And, like, maybe the three gods bless her so she can live and, like, she can be whole. But even, like, the point is, like, she wouldn't exist. Like, there's just, like, so many things where it's, like, in order for Ashi to exist, a coup has to exist, but also Ashi's mother has to exist. That future no longer happens. The slate's wiped clean. Ashi doesn't exist. But I was more shocked that Jack, I just would have thought Jack would have came to the realization.
Sure,
also. But I think he was just, like, you know, happy. And for once, and, like, about to get married and about to have a full happy ending. And I'm just, like, surprised he didn't think about that. But because I don't know if it's ever addressed in all of the, it is addressed actually, where he does know that going back in the past will erase the future that a coup created.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm pretty sure it's addressed, and he knows, like, that's his mission is, like,
right.
I will go back in time. I will defeat him. And this wretched future will never exist. But he doesn't connect the dots that means Ashi never exists.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing that kind of psyched me out, that I thought, oh, maybe he will have a happy ending, is when they defeat a coup. I think she says something to the effect of, like, I felt him leaving my body, or I, like, you know. So I thought, oh, okay, well, that's how they're going to address it. Like, they killed the evil, so that kills, like, whatever was left of him in her. So then maybe she's, like, free to live now, because he's not a part of her anymore. So then when it ended the way it did, I was like, okay. Because my original, like, just a guess at the ending was going to be like, oh, maybe because he's met her now and he's, like, made all of these friends, they'll, like, defeat a coup and then he'll just decide to live in the future forever because he's just, like, been there for so long. And that's how I thought they were going to, like, address that whole time loop situation of, like, not existing.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they had to go and break our hearts.
Yep. But do you think, because I also thought about that too at one point, of, like, if Ashi didn't have Aku's powers and if Jack knew he couldn't go back in time anymore, do you think, or if he had the option to leave Ashi, and then still go back in time and defeat a coup. Like, I just don't see a situation where he chooses to stay in the future.
Sure.
Because it's his sense of duty.
Yeah.
Even though, like, had he known that means he erases all the people that he ever helped and, like, all the people he ever met in the last 50 years.
Right.
That's just like, dang, I don't see any other way he would stay.
No, that's fair.
Which is confusing, because in one episode, we see Jack with a crown and old and a beard, and we assume he's in the future, mm-hmm. and then he goes back in time, but they never address that.
No.
Yeah, and that's where, as soon as we introduced Ashi, and I had the thought roll through my head, and especially as when she used her powers, my brain was immediately rattling on, we have been operating under single timeline time travel theory this entire time. We've never once introduced the concept of the multiverse. So,
which keeps it like clean.
It does, but to expect it to suddenly get opened right there at the end, there was part of me that was hoping they were going to try to do it in some manner. But as soon as it went back, I was just like, don't you take this love story from me.
Yeah, because you were rooting for from day one.
I was shipping that hardcore from the second they like start flirting. It was just like, yes, I am here for this.
Gosh.
Oh, I shipped it the second when she tried to kill him. I'm like, her.
Yep.
It's gonna be her.
Yep.
I see a ship. Our boy hasn't had a crush since Aku disguised himself as a woman, so he deserved it.
Yeah, during that episode when Aku disguises himself as a woman, Alan's like, do we get more of her? This is interesting. I'm like, she's a, you know, she's an interesting character.
I just
that's all I could get myself to say, because I knew if I said any more, I'd ruin it.
Up. I saw the green. I should have picked
the
it
green.
Up. It wasn't until he transformed, I was like, oh, Alan, you're a dummy. You should have seen that coming a mile away. I just wanted Jack to have a friend so bad.
Well, it's like, it's also Jack who has that same, like, Jack, come on. You know he's a trickster. You know he can disguise himself. This woman is green and wears black with red highlights in her clothes.
Right.
And it's not the first time it happens to Jack, but I think he does. No, that is the first time, but Aku tries to disguise himself and trick Jack again, and Jack, he learns from his mistakes when it's like the Yoda frog-like creature.
Yeah, like the little wizard.
He disguises himself as. And it's just, it's so, I'm like, good job, Jack. I'm glad that he learns from his naivety.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. So just to circle back real quick on the question I had asked about other characters as they experience shame, I just, like, for myself, kind of answered my own question. Because it comes up in that final battle in the future, that all of the characters that he helped, like, free from something, or like train to defend themselves or what have you, had experienced some level of shame that either kept them enslaved or kept them from being able to keep their own territory, like the tribe who jump good, or what have you.
Oh,
know,
yeah, jump good.
They're so great. So great.
I love them.
Right? And he aids in restoring their own honor by teaching them how to honor themselves, which I think is a huge like arc of the whole narrative. And then they help restore his honor back to him by coming forward to help defend him as he's like fighting for his true love. So I just think that's like another sort of theme throughout the entire narrative that is so beautiful. And goes back to, you know, a lot of his compassion. It reminds me of, I've brought this video game up before, but the game Wander Song, at the very end, you have like the whole world singing in chorus to help like keep destruction at bay. It's so cute. It is like, it's like syrupy sweet cute, but it's like a one that I can stomach. And that's what that reminded me of, all these different, like these like throwbacks to other episodes and stuff coming forward to help defend him. I was like, this is just like Wander Song. This is precious in my sight.
Yeah, it was so good. It was like the reunion episode that happens in every single season of the Power Rangers to where they call on the Power Rangers of old to come back and help fight against the modern evil. It was 100% that. And as soon as we saw everyone, I was just like, yes, and the bagpipes rolling into battle. I was like, yes!
It's just so, it's so good. And I think it's just like, That's the best thing I love about Samurai Jack is that you see that everything he did matter. And I think
Yeah.
this season, the final season, is definitely him feeling like he failed. But like every person he helped, every life he saved, it impacted them and they found hope.
Yeah.
They found a will to fight. They found a
Mm-hmm.
will to like not just accept a coup's reign.
Yeah.
And like it's like even like the dogs, like when the talking dogs come back, and
His
I'm just like, this is precious. Like he comes back to help, and it's like they were the first ones that Jack helped.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I mean, and like the 300, like there's just like so much. There's like so many great like flashbacks or like characters that come back. But I think like the Scotsman is definitely my favorite one because that man is dead. He's still fighting. He's dead, dead. Even though he's like a wee bit. No, you're dead, sir. You're dead. Oh, but no, it's great.
Gosh, yeah, so good.
Well, Naisha, I think that's going to bring us pretty close to time here. Where can folks find you and some of the projects that you work on the interwebs?
On the interwebs, they can find me at Twitter. I'm at LA_NEY_SHA. You guys can find me there, follow me, engage. If you want to talk about anime and the whatnot, that's what I'm there for. And as for my shows, you can find me at, see, I always mess up because there's acronyms. Okay. My anime podcast that you guys so graciously mentioned is Did You Have To? That's at DYHT_pod, also on Twitter, where me and my co-host Kate, we get into anime and we talk about all aspects of it, the good, the bad, and mostly the stuff we love, but we really do get into the good and the bad of it. And then there's also my entertainment review podcast that's called So Here's What Happened. That's also on Twitter at SHWH_pod. And that's where me and my co-host Carolyn, we talk about the things that we've watched and read throughout the month, and we kind of give our take on would we recommend it to you. But yeah, and all of those are a part of the Why Though podcast community. You guys can also find my writings over there. I think last time I was on y'all's show, I denied being a writer, but I have fully embraced being a writer now,
Good.
and I write a lot of anime and manga reviews. Shocker. So very on brand. But yeah, you guys can find that at thewhythepodcast.com.
Seriously, though, check those out, man. Percents, if you guys haven't listened to those already, they are a treat. Naisha, thank you so much for coming on and joining us again. We're gonna have to do this again. Gonna have to get your. Are you an Attack on Titan fan?
Yes.
Okay, you and I may need to have some
Sorry.
talk.
That was loud.
Oh, it's.
I knew it was coming, so I was just like, this is really enjoyable
I
to
was gonna
watch.
say because I've.
Man, we got stuff to talk about.
We do because I have been just finally catching up in the final season, and like I'm very excited about what I'm seeing. So yes, there's I have no one else to talk about this with. So we're gonna we may have to just do a you and I episode, very similar to how Fate ended up turning out last time.
Oh gosh, yes. And there's so much fate we could still talk about.
Yes, there are so many different
Please visit this again
series. Yes. All right. We will see you guys next week, man. Presents.